Hi, and welcome to the micro version of A Way to Go, where we talk about death, dying, and the choices we face. This podcast has been created by Dignity SA, a non-profit organization with a vision for South Africa, where all of us are supported through life's final journey with compassionate care, dignity, and the freedom to choose our own path. Dignity SA. Our lives, our choices. You can join Dignity SA as a member for free, which will give you access to the macro extended version of this podcast. It runs to about just shy of 40 minutes and contains loads more insight from my guest about his experience of the complexities involved in the choices he was faced with due to his illness, as well as some insider perspective on assisted dying, on how it might apply, and who for. It's a great listen. So, whether you want to sign up as a member or you're looking for more information about palliative care, advanced directives, withholding and withdrawing life-giving support, or our campaign to legalize assisted dying, please visit dignitysouthafrica.org for a wealth of resources. And although membership of Dignity SA is free, we do rely upon donations to help support our campaigns to provide the end-of-life options you might want for yourself and your loved ones, which you can read about in our latest newsletter, Dignity Matters, which is also on our website. My name is Sean O'Connor. Thanks so much for being here to be part of this bigger conversation about compassion and dignity at the end of life. And this particular conversation I had recently with an extraordinary young man whose illness led him to contemplate exactly how he'd like to end his own life on his own terms. Here is Brendan. So, Brendan, we meet at last. When did we first make contact? Do you remember?
It must have been around December 2023. January 2024.
Okay. And where were you living?
In the Eastern Cape with my mom and stepdad on the farm.
Wow. On a farm. Whereabouts in the Eastern Cape?
So, sort of in the middle of the province, not too far from Hogsback.
And what was your connection to the farm? Did you grow up around there or not?
No, they moved there just a couple of years ago. So they moved around quite a bit after they left Pretoria.
Okay.
So they had enough of Pretoria and they decided to move somewhere rural and quiet.
Okay, yeah. Did you move together with them or where were you staying beforehand?
No, so beforehand I was staying in Pretoria.
Okay.
And that's when I got the cancer diagnosis.
Okay.
And so when it became apparent that, okay, the surgery was not enough, I'll need to do chemotherapy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. What was your cancer diagnosis?
So, testicular cancer.
Okay. Right.
And so I thought I'd caught it early, and it was probably early, but there was a delay because I didn't have medical aid at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a urologist privately, and he wanted to do the surgery, and then it was just a bit expensive. So I had to shop around for a different urologist who could do it for a more reasonable price.
Wow.
So I was able to find someone like that.
Okay. Okay. And was that successful?
Yeah. So okay. That went well. Yes. And so he said, well, everything went well, but now they do have to send everything off to the lab for histology, just to verify that there's no spread.
Yeah.
They did the scan and they said, well, yes, it had spread to the lymph nodes, so they would need to do chemo.
Sure, that must have been a hard piece of news.
Yeah. You know, I was taking it well at the time. In retrospect, they also, on that first CT scan, noticed something in my lung.
Okay.
Like a little, tiny little spot that they said, this could be cancer because it does spread to the lymph nodes and then the lungs.
Right.
But they weren't able to really determine what that was.
Okay.
It was just like a question mark. So in retrospect, that's the doctors today, this is now jumping ahead a little bit.
Right.
They are saying that could have been the start of a lung condition already that had nothing to do with the cancer.
Okay.
Anyway, so I went through chemo. That was a rough journey. And then after the chemo, I decided to move to the farm.
Right.
Yes, so now we're back at the farm.
Okay.
And so I was recovering from the chemo, sort of just getting back into being a bit more active.
Mm.
And then I started noticing like some tightness in my chest. So it was very subtle. Something feels a little bit different.
Right.
And then all of a sudden I got very sick. Mm. So waking up in the middle of the night, coughing uncontrollably. Mm. And generally when you cough, you think, okay, well, it's just cough, 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 and then it's generally done.
Right.
But this was just, it just keeps coming. And sure. Yeah, I remember walking up from the cottage to the main house, still coughing along the way, almost passing out, calling my parents, saying, like, something's obviously wrong here. So we went to a GP in the town nearby.
Yeah.
He sent me for x-rays. And then the x-rays, the radiologist had written something about fibrosing in the lungs, like some scarring. That's the first time it became apparent that there's some damage in the lungs.
Okay.
So I was referred to Frere Hospital in the Eastern Cape in East London.
Right.
I wasn't really able to sleep properly. You know, needed anti-anxiety meds, sleeping medication. I needed oxygen as well.
Wow, okay.
So they wanted to send me to Port Elizabeth because they have a pulmonology department there.
Right.
But I was so ill, I couldn't really get out of bed.
Sure.
I was able to leave the hospital and go back to the farm. And then I was just sort of like, I couldn't imagine getting out of bed. And I actually ended up not getting out of bed for a while.
Okay.
Yeah, thinking that I could go to Port Elizabeth, but that would mean living in a hospital.
Hmm.
So
wow.
That wasn't something I wanted to do. I wasn't given an official diagnosis. I was just told that likely the chemotherapy caused damage to the lungs.
Right.
And it's pretty serious. It's a progressive injury,
Okay. Those
types of injuries.
Right.
In that they just get worse over time. The inflammation in the lungs never really goes away.
Hmm.
The immune system keeps perpetuating this inflammation, and the scarring, the fibrosing gets worse over time.
Okay.
I'm on oxygen 24/7.
Whoa. Okay.
Actually, you know, I left the hospital in East London already thinking this is the beginning of the end, you know.
Wow.
So this is sort of the thought process that I had in mind.
Wow.
Just being able to feel like what's going on in my body. It's like not really being able to walk even 5 steps and my oxygen levels dropping. And the body can tolerate that to an extent.
Right.
But if this is happening like several times throughout the day, you're always at risk of like organ failure.
So you had this very powerful sense of like, this is it. I'm on my way out.
Yes. So, I'd already done a bit of research online, knowing that, you know, the medical world in South Africa is not able to provide medical euthanasia, which is, in my mind, I thought this is what I would need, you know, in this situation. Okay. I didn't see any other real way out from there. So I was like, this is a hard decision, but it looked like the best, most responsible thing to do for me at the time. So I'd done a bit of research. I came across VSAID, an article written by someone in Scandinavia, maybe Norway, somewhere. It's like a nice little article, this lady telling a story of her dad who has pulmonary fibrosis.
Is that your diagnosis? Did you get a diagnosis?
At the time, that was the speculative diagnosis.
Okay, speculative diagnosis.
Bleomycin-induced pulmonary fibrosis.
Say that again?
Bleomycin-induced pulmonary fibrosis.
Okay. Yeah.
The bleomycin being the chemotherapy agent that is known to cause lung damage in some cases.
Right.
Yeah. So the article is about the woman and her father who has pulmonary fibrosis. He's at his end of life. he gets recommended by some hospice carer,
yeah,
doctor, to do VSAID.
VSAID, voluntarily stopping eating and drinking.
Yes. And she tells the story of what a beautiful process this is for him. And perfect for him, right?
Okay.
And I'm reading this thinking, well, maybe this could work for me as well. Later, I came to the conclusion that it's not such a great option. It might be for some very few people that are very old and frail.
Okay.
Yes. It is, for them, it might work well because it wouldn't take so long.
Did you try it?
So, yes. So I invited a friend over and I said to him, this is what I'm planning on doing. Will you help me with this? You know, because...
Wow.
My mom and stepdad are there, and they are able to help. But I just felt if I have a friend there who can sort of like provide a bit of extra help in the process, that would be good. So that's what I started doing. And I suppose within 5-6 days of that, I wasn't able to sustain it. I was just too thirsty.
How long were you expecting it to take?
My sense from the reading that I did is that it would take 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay.
For a younger person, maybe even a bit longer than that.
And did your mom and stepfather know what you're up to?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. What were their thoughts?
Yes, I mean, there were some mixed emotions, as you can imagine, with my mom saying, well, if this is really what you want to do, then I guess we need to support you. But then at the same time saying this is wrong, you shouldn't be doing this.
Right.
Which today I'm grateful for. And I can see what, you know, she was right. Because, I mean, look at me today. I'm doing a lot better now.
Yeah.
So a lot changed since that bleak thought of saying this is the responsible choice. Because I learned about this severe damage in my lungs.
That it was progressive?
It's progressive. I was reading about, you know, what it leads to. Usually you have about 3 to 5 years survivability once you get diagnosed. That's the average. It looked very bleak. Even the doctor, he was very reluctant to give me any clear answers. But I remember, I can quote him directly, he said, it's a very shit situation.
Okay.
And he's sorry.
Oh, wow.
So okay, then so I was like, okay, well, yeah, I mean, I really felt that of him saying he's sorry. There's nothing he could do for me.
Wow.
That was when I started to realize the severity of the situation. And that's when my mind said, this is maybe...
Okay.
The light at the end of the tunnel saying, yeah, like, the suffering that I'd been going through for the last 2 to 3 weeks, it doesn't have to continue for that much longer. This can be...
Okay.
You know. And then as I failed to do VSAID, I guess I was wondering how much longer would I need to live with the suffering day in, day out, coughing uncontrollably. After the first 5 or 6 days, I kind of broke my fast. I'd had something to drink and eat, but then I tried again. I was thinking maybe I just need a little break and I can keep going.
Yeah.
And then a few days later, I realized this really isn't going to work. So I'll need a different option.
Yeah.
Seeing how I'm unable to get out of bed and do anything for myself, really. I was like, well, this is what life will be like from here on out.
Okay.
Not knowing how long that would continue. If it got even worse than what it was like at that point, you know, needing hospice care. We're in the middle of Eastern Cape where there's no hospice care available. The closest hospice care was in East London. And so that was something I was considering.
So that's the sort of palliative care option, I guess.
Yes, yes. To see if there's something that they could do for me.
Right.
Yeah, I came across Exit International.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I was able to say, well, there is another option for ending one's life. You can do it on your own. You don't need supervision for it. as long as you can sort of gather these few different ingredients that are not too hard to come by, you'll have a reliable method of going out, so to speak.
So reliability was a big factor.
Yes, because I was very aware of that, how it could potentially go wrong, and you might end up in an even worse situation.
Indeed.
With brain damage,
etc. Right.
So that's the very scary prospect. So you want to be sure what you're doing is going to work. You have to be, first of all, sure of that this is the right decision for you, which to me was even like, I couldn't really imagine. It was hard for me to put myself into that mindset or scenario of imagining that today is the day, you know.
Yeah.
But I suppose what I'm trying to say is that I learned of this method. I got the necessary things that you need for it. And then once I had those, I felt so much better.
Huh.
Immediately. It was like all my anxiety sort of settled down.
That's very profound. That
I have it right there in the drawer.
Yeah.
In case I really need it. And there were some days where I was like, maybe today or tomorrow it could be the day.
Wow.
So having access to that option was immediately soothing. Just knowing that, yes, the suffering can continue as long as I need it to, but it doesn't need to.
Okay.
And, you know, my mom and stepdad were aware of the whole situation. I didn't hide anything from them. There was a lot of tension, you know, and stuff, but they didn't want to keep that from me. And so that was kind of where I landed.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, just to let you...
Sure. Do you think that your sense of relief... at having the means available to you that you've just described, or your anxiety dropped, had any part to play in your current status of health? Do you think it helped you, I don't know if heal is the right word, but evolve from that state in a way?
Yes, I think it does, because all I really needed was time. And then the anxiety was part of what was making it so difficult. In the first place.
Yeah.
So once that settled, it was like, well, now it's just physical discomfort.
Okay.
And a lot of distress, but less anxiety.
Wow. My mind sort of reels at the idea of how close you came to ending your life. You know, 5 days in, take a break, carry on.
Yeah.
Well, obtain the substance, gaze at it, you know, consider it.
Yes. Every day I'm thinking, like, when is the right time for this? And it might still get worse again.
So you have a reprieve for now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we're going to leave it there. Thank you for listening. And please remember to visit dignitysouthafrica.org. If you want to know where this conversation went to from here, you can register as a member for free to access the extended version on our website. Please also do contact us via the website if you're even just considering sharing your story about end-of-life choices. We'd love to be in touch with you. Maybe we can feature your experience right here in the show as an act of catharsis, as a homage, to add to the voices calling for a change in our legislation, and to add to the value of death in our lives. Until next time, if there is one, please spread the word that talking about death is good for life. Adios.